Welcome.
Yes, welcome.
To episode 23 of the Cosmopolitan Hour.
Yes.
That means we're heading up on like half a year of podcasting.
Totally.
I mean, I guess it's probably been about half a year now because we've missed some weeks, but
Yeah,
that's exciting for us.
It is exciting.
Yeah. So here we are for you.
Face to face, a couple of silver spoons.
Silver spoons.
Indeed.
Yeah. Yeah. From we're coming to you from beautiful Oakland.
Yes.
/ Emeryville.
Yeah.
California. And we've got a lot to talk about.
We do.
Today.
Molly might have a few additions if she can't keep her trap shut.
Yes, there might be a few dog outbursts today.
Yes, she's feeling particularly spicy today.
Yes, so. Full of piss and vinegar.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now her little head is wedged up between your thigh and my knee, which is pretty cute.
Yeah. She's burrowing.
Yeah.
So I think, why not start off with what's become a running theme in the Cosmopolitan Hour.
All right, Glenn Beck.
Glenn Beck's latest antics.
Yeah, we're going to have to change the name of this thing to the Glenn Beck Hour.
Yeah.
Because sooner or later it's going to happen. Well,
Glenn Beck, what the fuck is wrong with you hour?
Yeah, no kidding. So, Glenn Beck, noted douchebag and television and radio star, Glenn Beck, is at it again. Well, first off, Glenn Beck's advertisers are at it again. They after his racist remark about Obama that we talked about.
Obama has a fundamental hatred of white people.
Right, right. Or maybe just white culture. We're not entirely sure.
Oh, right, right, right.
right. After that, a bunch of his major advertisers yanked their advertisements from his show, which is awesome, except that it kind of doesn't matter because they're not dropping his network entirely. They're just dropping his show. So basically their advertisements are just going to get booted over to some other section of the Fox News stable of stars.
So given the type of audience that's really into Glenn Beck, what I'm trying to imagine what advertisements would either stick around or be appropriate for that audience. And one thing that comes directly to mind is the I forget the name of it. It's like the pea putter or something. You know, that golf club that you can piss into?
Yes, yes.
I think that's one commercial that might stick around for, or at least should stick around for the Glenn Beck
Perhaps,
show.
Though, you know, I don't know. Golfing might be too, like, rich person faggy for most of Glenn Beck's audience. I mean, you know, like, there's that segment of the population that thinks that, like, golf is, like, you know, there's that segment of the conservative population that thinks that golf is, you know, like, something that it's pretty cool, and like, I hope that one day I can have enough money to have my country club membership and play golf. And then I think there's that segment of the conservative population, which I suspect might be Glenn Beck's segment, that thinks that anything that involves any degree of skill or patience or discipline is faggy and just isn't into it. I suspect that people who are into Glenn Beck are a lot more into wrestling.
Yeah, yeah, I could see that. I've got it. The Juggalo Gathering should have their 15-minute infomercial, like, between Glenn Beck's show. They could, like, totally underwrite it.
How does that work, though? Like, I mean, the Juggalos are probably as stupid as Glenn Beck.
Yeah, definitely.
But I don't know, what is the political skew of the Juggalos? Like, are they concerned? I mean, I imagine that they're not terribly progressive, but are they actually conservative? Like, do they like, not want tax? I'm probably, most stupid people are,
I think
are,
Juggalos
I guess.
Transcend politics.
That's true.
They
That's
rise true. Above it all.
What percentage of the Juggalo population do you think votes? We really should have gone to the Juggalo Gathering just so we could take polls like this.
Yes.
Do you vote?
We can walk around with clipboards.
Yeah. How many of you have had like, children? Ooh. How many children do you have?
We should send the Census Bureau to the Juggalo gathering. Let's send some census reps.
That would be awesome. I would be really interested to know a few key demographics.
Let's break it down.
Yeah. Yeah. I would, that will help me determine exactly how scared of the Juggalos to be.
Well, 98% of the Juggalos we surveyed considered themselves to be psychotic.
Right, right. And that's fine. As long as as long as they're not voting in extremely large, powerful numbers, I'm pretty much okay. But
well, I think a good percentage, going by, you know, just what we've seen on the internet, I would say a good chunk of Juggalos are underage. So
probably.
They probably are too young to vote.
Probably. Not too young to join the military, probably. But,
yeah.
Not
too young to rack up lots of lifetime debt.
Right.
But too young to vote.
Right.
And again, not to be a horrible generalizer, but I think those who are old enough to vote are probably disqualified because of some federal convictions, maybe.
Possibly. Possibly. I would imagine that voter apathy is pretty widespread among the Juggalo population.
Yeah.
Because I would imagine that voting would probably be seen as kind of faggy by them. It's like, yeah, Glenn Beck and the Juggalo population represent kind of two different segments of the population that both make me really scared that that movie Idiocracy is going to actually happen. You know?
What if Glenn Beck is like a closet Juggalo?
That would be amazing. But look at him. Like, I mean... That guy's ears would bleed if he had to listen to even, like, the shitty white bread, like, clown hop of the Insane Clown Posse. Like, seriously, I don't think he could take it.
Yeah.
I think it would just be, like, that, like, tiny little, like, 80 times removed whiff of blackness in that music would be, like, just too much.
True.
Too much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't encompass enough of the white culture to please Glenn Beck.
No. Well, never mind the fact that these guys paint themselves essentially in whiteface, but...
Yeah. Well, there's some black paint in there, too.
That's true. That's true. Maybe that's, like, their sociological, you know, tip of their hat to the kind of the blackface performers of old.
Yes.
What kind of music do you think Glenn Beck likes?
Hmm.
I think he's a parrot head.
What's a parrot head?
Someone who's really into Jimmy Buffett.
Oh.
Warren Buffett? I get them mixed up. One of them's a billionaire, one of them's like an idiot. And I honestly
I think
am
Warren
blanking.
Buffett is the millionaire.
Okay.
I think so.
Okay. Cheeseburger in Paradise guy, anyways.
I'm gonna say Glenn Beck listens to, like, classic rock, you know, like God Bless America kind of stuff, like Steely Dan maybe, and maybe some Chicago. He's into the classic rock station, but when it gets to things like Aerosmith, it's too heavy for him, and he, like, you know, he moves it to the oldies station or something, so he can remember a time when, you know, blacks knew their place.
I picture him listening to, like, Kenny G... But maybe with, like, some country thrown in there. So, like, maybe, like, you know, some Kenny G and Yanni and that kind of thing, like, to soothe his soul.
I don't know. I think that's too new age for him.
See, I guess. But I'm trying to think of, like, the whitest, like, most soulless, like, stupid music that people that think that they're, like, smart and have musical taste listen to. But really, it's just, like, the marker of, like, the biggest idiot ever. And Kenny G is what comes to my mind. But, probably country, actually. Like, top
40. I bet he listens to a lot of solo acts, like Sting and Paul McCartney.
Maybe.
Like,
though those people are too progressive for him. They don't like America.
That's true.
Like, yeah, Paul McCartney especially.
He doesn't even eat meat. What the hell's wrong with that guy?
I know. Fag. and please, you know, listeners, when I say that word, know that I'm being satirical.
Yes, exactly.
But anyway, so yeah, Glenn Beck, he had a big week this week. He had his advertising yanked. And then he had Nancy Pelosi on his show.
Yeah. Or a cardboard approximation of Nancy Pelosi. Yeah,
Glenn Beck did a very bizarre segment that I recommend you all look up.
It was surreal, and I think I totally agree with the person who wrote it up on Examiner.com. They said, in a segment of his show, which increasingly resembles a nightmare from a David Lynch film, Glenn Beck spoke with a woman wearing a Nancy Pelosi mask. I think that is the best summary of how Glenn Beck's show has turned lately. It is like a David Lynch film. It's like, what purpose does this serve, and why is this happening, and why am I strangely terrified by it?
Yeah, like, it really is like a vision of the future, watching Glenn Beck.
It's a fever dream.
Yeah, like, you really get this sense that you're like, shit, if this is where the world is going, we're fucked. Yeah. Like, we are, like, we're headed directly for, Idiocracy, or, like, some weird combination of Idiocracy in 1984.
Yeah.
You know? And that's terrifying. But anyway, so he had this really bizarre segment where he sat down and he was all like, wouldn't it be great? I could go to, like, Nancy Pelosi's little media shindig thing in wine country. That would be so great. And then then the camera pans out, and you see, like, a woman, like, one of his camera people, or, like, somebody from his technical crew, because they're wearing, like,
intern.
Yeah, they're wearing, like, a hoodie, so.
Yeah.
Which makes it all the more bizarre, you know?
Well, you know, Nancy just, you know, she stepped off that jogging trail and into Glenn Beck's studio for a quick chat.
Yeah, perhaps.
Quick glass of Cabernet.
But she's basically just got, like, a cardboard cutout of Nancy Pelosi's face, like, taped to her face. Yeah. So she can't see anything. She's just this woman and, like...
She's just nodding mutely and waving.
Yeah, and so Glenn Beck starts saying things like, you know, thank you for having me, and won't you have some wine, and... I'm so excited to get to talk to all of these things, and I didn't think that I'd be invited because I'm not a big Democratic Party donor, and then he's like, and by the way, I've poisoned your wine. like really, really, really weird. And then
we are watching the mental decline of a man in the throes of illusion.
I'm going to feel really, really, really bad when this guy's, like, diagnosed with, like, mad cow disease or something like that, and it's revealed that he has actual holes in his brain, and he's been, like, totally off the deep end because he has some horrible brain disease that is totally impairing. It really would, but I still feel very bad because I'd be like, oh, you know.
Yeah.
Well, he has, you know, he only has 20% of his brain left, and he's only able to use 10% of that, so... That's kind of rough.
Would you like to wager that by episode 50 of the Cosmopolitan Hour, there will at least have been one incident of Glenn Beck flinging his own feces on air?
You know what? I don't know if I'd take that bet, but I would bet that by episode 52, when we've done a year's worth, that Glenn Beck will... be off the air and dealing with some kind of major lawsuit or health crisis. Could be,
yeah, in some sort of rehab facility, be it drugs, alcohol, which allegedly he does not imbibe, or mental.
Just like, you know, Ted Haggard.
Haggard.
That's kind of the way it is, though, isn't it? Like, the people who speak the loudest.
Oh, yeah.
They have the biggest comeuppances, and I am really, really looking forward to
We're waiting for you to trip and fall on your face.
Because we know that it's only a matter of time. Like,
that's
right. I mean, it's like it's too good to be true, you know?
Yeah.
But it seems to happen to, like, every right-wing Republican douchebag who spouts off, like, you know, hateful, harmful things, you know, like... Governor Sanford of North Carolina caught, he was like a big, you know, focus on the family, pro family values kind of like lame-o who was really like vocal and really advocated for a lot of, you know, kind of family first and that kind of bullshit. Whatever. And then he got caught, he disappeared from his office and got caught later carrying on what I think he came out with. Was something like an 8-year long affair with a woman in Argentina.
Yep.
And you know, yeah.
I think someone wrote into, I think it was Savage Love, and they proposed that because he said when you know, his most recent trip to Argentina got him caught. He claimed that he had been hiking the Appalachians.
Right, right.
So someone wrote to Savage Love and said that hiking the Appalachian should be like a new euphemism for cheating on your spouse.
Right, right. I like that one.
I like that too.
Okay. I mean, not that I really like euphemisms for cheating on your spouse, but that is pretty apt. But yeah, there's that. There's what's his name? The anti-gay activist. Was he I can't remember if he was a congressman or if he's a governor.
Or the guy from Idaho or whatever.
Yeah, that got caught signaling or like soliciting sex in an airport bathroom.
Yeah.
yeah, and of course Ted Haggard, the methed out gay prostitute loving minister.
Who was the one that got caught flirting with his page boy?
Oh, that was a Florida guy. What the hell is his name? I don't even remember. But it just, it always happens. It always, another one in the always pile. Happens.
Yep.
And, you know, I mean, I don't, in a way I feel bad taking so much glee when somebody else, like, totally fucks up their life.
And I don't feel bad when they're, you know, I feel bad if somebody fucks up their life and they're a nice person. But when somebody's, like, too busy judging other people to take stock of their own life, then yeah, I don't feel bad at all.
Yeah.
I feel like they get their comeuppance pretty much.
That is true.
I feel bad that they are so repressed.
And
that
fucked
up.
Yeah,
that they need to criticize other people and point their fingers in other people's lives instead of minding their own goddamn business. I mean, what the fuck do I care if Ted Haggard likes to smoke meth and fuck boys, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, as long as they're overage, of course.
Right.
But, you know, I don't fucking care, but if you're gonna go around saying how homosexuals are doomed to go to hell and how they're evil and God hates them.
And they shouldn't be getting married and they shouldn't have any rights.
Yeah, if you're gonna go say that shit and then go smoke some meth and fuck a dude, then yeah, of course I'm gonna make fun of you.
Right, right.
Be warned.
That's true. I think that's probably pretty fair warning.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the other thing that Glenn Beck has done this week, besides, like, incredibly bizarre, like, I mean, what if he's actually a performance artist? What if he's, like, this performance artist who's, like, at, like, the Cooper Union or some kind of, like, prestigious art school?
It would be a greater coup than Borat or Bruno, I can tell you that.
Yeah, I mean, what if this is all, like, his elaborate performance art piece?
That would be great.
That would be great, because... Yeah, kudos. Then.
Well done, sir. You really got into character.
But in addition to his extremely bizarre television moments, he's also been indirectly, like, basically inciting riots this week in Florida at these town hall meetings that the various, I believe mostly Democratic representatives have been holding on the healthcare reform proposals that have been going around. And, my understanding is that Glenn Beck has been basically spearheading some kind of activist group that has encouraged basically right-wing mobs to show up at these town halls. And things have been getting really violent. Like, people are getting their clothes ripped off and, like this...
Dang.
Yeah, and you know, thrown up against walls, and they're getting, like, they're beating people up, and, like, the police are having to come and, like, subdue these... So, what the fuck is that supposed to accomplish? Can you fill me in? Like, is this the revolution? Is this how the revolution is going to come? Like, spearheaded by some Fox News douchebag and carried out by, like, these, like, troglodyte...
Insane. Minutemen.
Yeah. Like, is that what's going to happen? Are these going to be the successful revolutionaries?
Clearly, Glenn Beck has taken to heart the first line of the Hippocratic Oath, which is, first, do no harm. Because he cares so much... about the healthcare situation in America, that he's going to make sure that everybody experiences the healthcare system firsthand. in a way, it's almost a shame. I mean, not that I want to incite violence. I totally do, though. against these, you know, Glenn Beck's followers. But, you know, if they, for a change, got thrown up against a wall or beat up or had their clothes ripped off, and if they had to go to the hospital and perhaps experience what it's like to try and get health care if you're uninsured or underinsured, then they might change their tune. But instead, they're just beating up the people who, you know, they're preaching to the choir.
Well, the thing that I wonder is really how many of these people have good insurance?
Like,
if any of these people got hurt in their in the line of their protesting duty,
totally.
How many of them would be well served by this healthcare system that they're like,
fighting to defend.
And then on top of that, like, the things that I'm hearing coming out of these people's mouths.
Well, Jordan, they're not lazy. They have insurance because they work for it, like real Americans.
But I don't think that a lot of them even do. I think a lot of them are really poor.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And that was the right wing's greatest coup, is getting the working class on their side.
Yeah, they
and working against their own interests.
They made false consciousness work for them.
Oh, yeah.
But I mean, the things that these people are saying, and the thing, like, they don't even understand what they're doing. They don't understand, and it's not like they have a slightly wrong idea, and they're just going out and they're protesting, and they're like, you know, I don't want more taxes or something. You know, like, they've got it so wrong. Like, they honestly have no idea. Like, they don't have, like, the general idea, and they've, like, made a mistake on the nuance. They don't know anything about what they're saying, because you're getting all these quotes now coming from all these protesters who are like, keep your government hands off my Medicaid. And it's like, Medicaid is the only government-funded healthcare that there is in this country right now.
Yeah.
Like, you have gotten it so colossally wrong.
I love how people want less government involvement, but only when it suits them. Like,
right.
Keep your government out of my health care, but definitely keep me from getting an abortion, because that shit is fucked up, yo.
Right.
You know?
Right. And, you know,
keep your laws off my Medicaid, but on my body.
Yeah, but I you know, and again, like, this argument's been used again and again and again and again by people on the left. We're just like, okay, well, you know, you hate taxes so fucking much. Well, okay, build your own roads, you know? Let build your own electricity facilities. Yeah. Like, build every, you know, which electricity is not totally tax funded. But I mean, you don't have the infrastructure for all these kinds of things that you get to do with your tax dollar savings without the taxes. Like, you don't get anything. Like, I mean, libraries. Do you want to have libraries? Yeah. Like, is that just some dirty socialist plot to corrupt everybody?
The firefighters are really, you know,
firefighters,
where it's at.
Police.
They're really the big waste of time. I mean, whose house catches on fire anymore? Jesus, it's the 21st century, people.
Yeah.
You think we make shit out of wood at all anymore? Jesus.
Get it together and don't let your houses catch on fire.
I know. It's all about personal responsibility, okay, people? I'm tired of picking up your slack because you think you need to cook your food. Get over it, dickhead.
Yeah,
Jesus.
Exactly.
Get off my phone!
So anyways, Glenn Beck is having an increasingly busy week, and I can only imagine what's in store for us next week.
A trip further down the descent into madness.
Yeah, we're going to go further down the rabbit hole.
The irreversible spiral of one man's mental decline.
Yeah, yeah. And I am going to be really sad when eventually the headlines come out where they're like, he has mad cow disease.
Yeah.
He has, like, some kind of insane mental illness. Yeah. So that was the Glenn Beck segment of the show for this week.
God.
Thank you for listening. All you Beckheads. So what else is going on?
Oh, God. I don't know. That Glenn Beck thing just kind of blew up and took over everything else. Oh, I know what we can talk about. It's kind of related to what we were talking about. It's kind of an ongoing issue with me, but I take issue with all these politicians who talk about being family-friendly and caring about families and stuff. But you know what? They can't really co-opt the use of the word family, because I think that's really insulting to imply that you cannot be a family unless you reproduce. Or, well, to really use their definition, you cannot be a family unless you are heterosexual and you reproduce, which is insulting to a lot of people. It's insulting to gay people, because lots of gays have families. All gays have families. All gay people have a mom and a dad, you know, regardless of whether they're in touch with them or whether, you know, they're deceased or not. You know, a lot of gay people have siblings and grandparents and partners and, believe it or not, children. Oh my God, yes.
Yeah.
Some gay people actually have biological children, if you can wrap your head around that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I am not, I don't have any kids and I don't plan on having kids, but I consider myself to belong to a family. I have parents. I have a significant other of almost 9 years. I have a dog, which is almost as precious as a child to me, even though she's a pain in the butt sometimes. So, you know, I just get, and this is more part of my wider kind of grumpiness over the whole, you know, as a woman in our culture, you know, I'm expected to want babies or be planning for babies or be like horribly despondent that I'm almost 30 and I don't have any babies yet. So I just want to put it out there that I take issue with the concept of somebody being family friendly or focusing on the family, because I don't buy into your narrow definition of what a family, what constitutes a family. So there.
Amen.
Woo!
I mean, I guess it's weird for me to think of my husband as my family.
Yeah.
Even though I guess now he is, because you don't normally think about members of your family and then think about having sex with them. So, I guess it's
well, I don't know how it works in your family.
All right, okay. Well, my, yeah.
Maybe not in Canada.
In my repressed, like,
you live
waspy.
In America now.
We're
all about having sex with cousins. And
I don't, see, I don't have any cousins, so I don't know.
Well, there you go. That's
that.
Why you don't think about having sex with your family.
I guess so. I've missed out. But, but I think you're right. I think that, there's too much of a tendency, I think, generally in this culture to think about families as basically just meaning kids.
Yeah.
And I think that
the
part
nuclear
of...
nuclear units.
Yeah, and I think that part of what is going to maybe bring about or help bring about more rights for people who are in non-traditional family structures is, like, thinking about them when you use the word family. Like, instead of thinking family and thinking mom, dad, kids.
Yeah.
Then, I mean, thinking about family and thinking, you know... maybe dad, kid, or maybe mom, and no kids, or maybe mom, dad, no kids, or like, you know,
mom, dad,
right,
a couple kids,
right, or mom, dad, cats, which is how my family is.
Yes,
is
mom, ponies.
Yeah,
we could do this all day.
Right, ponies. Ah, dear.
Lesbians and ponies. That's always a good combination.
Yeah. We should poll my sister and see
yes.
How many people in the lesbian community she knows that are really into ponies. but anyways, I mean, I guess it's neither here nor there, but the Cosmopolitan Hour supports family structures of all types.
That's right.
Whether it's traditional or less traditional, they are all families.
Unless you're living in sin, because that shit's fucked up.
Yeah. Yeah, you do have to be married, because otherwise,
totally.
Yeah.
God.
Yeah, common law will do, but seriously.
Just remember, God is watching you at all times.
Right, and don't forget it.
Yeah, he's a peeping Tom.
God is a pervert.
Yeah.
That would be funny if we could make, like, a ceiling God is watching you. You know, do whatever.
Ceiling Lord.
Ceiling Lord, I like that.
Ceiling Judeo-Christian deity is watching you masturbate.
I like Ceiling Lord. I'm gonna try and make that for my apartment.
Can we use the image of God from, I think it was the Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Yeah.
That image of him with like the big beard and like the funny crown.
Yes, but I think that is totally perfect.
That's my favorite image of God.
Yeah. Yeah, Monty Python always did a good job with God.
Yeah. They
did. Do you want to take a donut finding break and discuss topics that we can get back to
let's
for the second
totally
half?
Let's totally do that.
Yes, let's do that. Bar.
Oh yeah,
for me.
And we also found some Faygo. We found Faygo in California.
We did.
We can be psychotic, insane clown juggalos now.
Yep. We bought the most traditional flavor, Red Pop.
Yep.
Which I hear is the favorite of juggalos.
Excellent.
But we're not going to drink it.
No.
We're worried about the side effects.
We're going to give it to our loved ones to let them be the guinea pigs.
The real juggalos.
Yeah. True.
We're
true
just...
juggalo.
Yep.
Much clown love, y'all.
Yeah. have we gotten any Juggalo hate mail?
Ooh.
Should we check the old email?
Let's check the old email.
Your dog is really into my pants.
Yeah. Melissa wrote back to us.
Hooray!
Hey, Cosmo, politicians! Whoa! Melissa, you're dish. Out of control.
Dish. We just got dish. That took me a minute to get it, but... Melissa, jeez.
Hey, Cosmo, politicians! It's Melissa. I wanted to thank you for your advice. You're welcome, Melissa. It's so nice to hear from other vegans since I am the only one in Connecticut. Seriously. I will definitely give my vegan tattoo some more thought. I never even thought about vegan ink. That's a great point. I've got some research to do. I do already have a tattoo, and it is really terrible.
Awesome.
I did pick it off the wall. I was 18 and stupid. The tattoo is a tribal butterfly with a rose. It is horrid.
We need to have a bad tattoo gallery on our blog.
Well, it sounds like Melissa has completely fulfilled the horrible first tattoo aspect of the tattoo journey.
She can join our sisterhood of first tattoodom.
You have primed the canvas, so to speak, and you are all systems go.
Yeah.
Sorry for being terse in my previous email. I should have proofread it first. I'm actually 32, and I have 2 kids of my own. I think I got a little overexcited because you guys are so awesome.
Aw.
Yes. Keep it coming, Melissa. Lay it on thick.
So, Deborah is the official mom of the Cosmopolitan Hour. I think Melissa should be the official pen pal of the Cosmopolitan Hour. Since she writes us that consistently.
Mm-hmm.
And we like that.
She can be the Cosmopolitan Hour scribe.
Yes.
And the official pep talk giver.
Right.
You guys are awesome! Woo!
Yeah, whenever we start to doubt ourselves, all we have to do is go back and look at Melissa's email.
Yeah.
And I'm being serious. I'm not being
Well, thank you, Melissa. And yes, let us know if you have any more ideas for your vegan tattoos, and we'll give our wizened opinions.
Yes.
All right, so email's out of the way. So I wanted to talk about, I read in the news this morning that the adult children of J.R.R. Tolkien are suing New Line because they have not seen a single red penny of all the Lord of the Rings trilogy films.
Wow.
And so if you include all the theatrical releases and DVD sales, that's £3 billion. So it's close to like $6 billion.
Right.
And they haven't seen a single bit of it. And apparently J.R.R. Tolkien signed over the rights to the films in like 1968 or something. And he got something like £159,000, which I'm sure was substantial in the 60s. But considering the movies made £3 billion in, you know, the 21st century, that's cough up the cash, New Line.
Yeah, wow.
Not to mention, until this thing is settled, it's holding up the production of the Hobbit film, which is going to see Sir Ian McKellen reviving his role as Gandalf.
Yes!
And it made me laugh because I started thinking about you and your Canadian way of speaking and how you would call him Gandalf. And it made me laugh.
That's how Frodo calls him.
Is it?
Gandalf.
Okay.
Yeah. Suck it, American.
It's not my fault Frodo's Canadian. Shit.
No, he's British, as was Tolkien.
Is there a Britain in Middle Earth?
No, but it's assumed, at least in the movies, that all of the hobbits and characters are British. They all have the
That's
accent.
That's true. Even down to the region, like Sam's got the West Country accent.
Yeah, and Pippin has the Scottish accent.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because they're in different parts of the Shire. It's true.
Yes, we're nerds. But anyway, it got me thinking about, you know, Sir Ian McKellen and how totally fucking awesome he is.
He is awesome.
And the revelation that came out after the 7th Harry Potter book came out. And I've got Harry Potter on the brain because I finally finished book 6 last night at like 1 a.m. so I can see the movie.
In what language?
In Swedish. Which is funny because I've read all the Harry Potter books in Swedish, so it helps me practice my language skills. And as a result, I don't know a lot of the words for the made-up things in English, or a lot of the characters' names are changed slightly because they're very symbolic names and they have meaning to them. So sometimes when I watch the movies, I'm like, oh, is that what they're called? You know? like,
give us an example. What are some Swedish Harry Potter terms or names?
Let me IMDb TS. Oh, well, here's an example. So, like, there's an evil werewolf in the Harry Potter series, and his name is Fenrir Greyback.
Okay.
And in Swedish, his name is literally translated. So in Swedish, the character's name is Fenrir Grorig, which means Greyback.
I see.
So, and that's like an example. And then like, you know, the little spells and, you know, the little magical things that exist all have different names. So, yeah, it's very interesting. But, you know, it's been very helpful for my language skills. I now know how to say things, you know, like black magic in Swedish and, you know, invisibility cape, you know, really, you know, important vocabulary
so basically,
for anybody to know.
If you ever want to go LARPing in Sweden,
exactly.
You are set, unless it's like a World War II LARP.
Yeah. I'm going to have to stick to some D&D LARP.
Right, right.
But anyway, so I've had Harry Potter and Lord of the Rings on my mind today, and I'm confident I'm not the first person to think of this, but, you know, there was that big revelation after the seventh book came out and the series was quote-unquote finished. I guess J.R. Tolkien, or J.K. Rowling, not J.R.R. Tolkien, felt confident enough in coming out and saying that Dumbledore, Professor Dumbledore, is gay.
Right. I remember that. And I haven't read any of the books.
And it's a big shock. Although I'm sure she didn't really lose any readers, because I'm sure anybody who would be offended by the concept of a gay wizard would have already been alienated by the concept of magic to begin with.
You know, you would think so, but I am shocked to find that there are, like, Christian Harry Potter communities.
Mm. Yeah.
Like, and very fundamental, like, not like, you know, kind of like
Progressive,
yeah. But like serious, like evangelical Christians who are really into Harry Potter. And I'm like, that's weird, because yeah, magic is not supposed to be something that they are down with.
Well, the books do have a very stark theme of, you know, good versus evil.
Yeah, and I get that, but
and they do have, you know, Christian, you know, what's I forget the phrase I'm looking for, but you know, all the ways Christianity has infiltrated our everyday lives, like, you know, they celebrate Christmas and Easter, and I'm like, do wizards believe in Jesus? Maybe Jesus was a wizard.
Yeah, shouldn't they be...
Wasn't that the greatest trick of all?
Yeah, shouldn't they be celebrating Yule?
Although I do like, in the book, one of the phrases that people use, like, you know, instead of saying something like, I swear on my mother's life, they say, like, by Merlin's beard. I think that's cute. But anyway, that getting back to my point. So, Dumbledore's gay, and, as far as I can tell, Gandalf isn't gay, but Ian McKellen is.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking, you know, how awesome would it be to see a little, like, Dumbledore-Gandalf spoon action? You know?
Oh,
like,
man.
How cute would they be as a couple? You know, their little matching beards.
That would be really cute.
They'd have, like, movie nights at home where they braid each other's beards.
What kind of things do two elderly wizards do on a date?
Well, I'm thinking, you know, I mean, this could be a whole subset of the gay community that we're ignoring. I mean,
like, there's bears.
There's bears and otters. Yeah. And, you know, clearly there's the whole wizard subset of the bear community. You know, they've got the long beards.
That's true.
Yeah.
You know, that's true.
Yeah.
I think that we should make that term happen. Yeah. Wizards.
Yeah.
There's bears, and then there's, like, the bears who are, like, not quite so into motorcycles and...
they're
motorhead,
more into broomsticks.
And they're, like, getting older, and they've got, like, their big, long beards and stuff like that. And they're not pussies, but they're, like, they're wizards.
Yeah.
Yep.
They don't need to be overtly masculine.
No.
They're hairy. They're comfortable wearing robes.
Mm-hmm.
Long, flowing robes.
Okay. I'm down.
So, clearly the Castro is missing a wizard bar.
Let's start it.
Let's open
San Francisco's first wizard bar.
Let's do it. Oh man, that would be so awesome.
How much do you think it costs to open a bar in San Francisco? $6 million?
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're in the Castro, yeah. That's some hot real estate right there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just like the mental image of Gandalf and Dumbledore kind of cuddling.
I don't
Not
really
necessarily anything dirty, just some good clean cuddling.
I don't really know what Dumbledore looks like, but I like the idea of
Oh, I can show you what he looks like.
Let's see.
Get out of the way, Molly.
Oh,
yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, see, wouldn't they make a great couple?
They would make a great couple. Very cute.
You guys go together so well. So the other big news on the cover of People magazine this week.
Oh.
Saved by the Bell reunion.
I know. And the checker at Whole Foods when you bought it was so excited that you were buying it.
Yeah.
She asked you what your favorite episode was.
Yeah, she kind of caught me there because I was like, as much as I used to watch Saved by the Bell, I have a really bad memory for TV and movies, so it kind of tends to blur together after a while.
I can't remember anything from Saved by the Bell.
I'm like, I'm sure I've seen, like, most of the episodes, but I don't remember any of them.
Yeah.
But I do remember when Elizabeth Berkley took study pills and had, like, a nervous collapse. Because it was a very special episode, all in caps. Maybe this should be a very special episode of The Cosmopolitan Hour.
Well, what are we doing that we need to, like, see the light and learn our lesson from?
I'm concerned about your use of study drugs, Jordan.
I never used study drugs, though. I probably should have.
There's that, Sorry, I have a mouthful of food.
That's
really gross.
I'm eating popcorn really loudly. It's gonna be awesome on the show.
There was, kind of that period of time in the late 80s, early 90s, when there were, pretty much every sitcom that was on TV was, there was, like, the requisite very special episode where they talked about study drugs.
See, I remember, it's not about study drugs. I remember, Full House, that episode where they talked about, like, eating disorders, sort of, over-exercise, and it was when they were, like, going to, like, a pool party, and DJ was really worried about her weight, and so she didn't eat for, like, 3 days, and then she was exercising, and she passed out on the machine, and they were all like, DJ, you're beautiful the way you are. It was a very special episode.
And then they all went out to Alamo Square Park.
That's entirely possible.
And had a picnic.
Maybe.
Yeah, there were, now that you mention it, I remember there was a diet pill, very special episode of 90210.
Oh.
Where Kelly collapsed in the bathroom, in the girls' bathroom.
From diet pills.
Yeah, because they were going to do a Robert Palmer, that's the guy, right? The musician? Robert Palmer?
Yes.
Addicted to Love?
Yes.
Yeah, they were going to do a karaoke act, you know, and they all had the black dresses, and they were all dressed up like the music video, and she was, like, on diet drugs. And it all started because they went to an exclusive day spa, and someone mentioned working on her problem areas, and then she got really insecure and took diet drugs.
I never watched 90210. I always felt like it was so far removed from my life that I couldn't identify.
Funny you should mention that, because I watched it. I wasn't quite sure why. I just knew that all of the popular kids were watching it, so I should watch it too. This back before I fucking got a clue. But,
happens to the best of us.
But I remember having an argument with my mom about it, because I wanted to watch it, and she didn't want to let me. And to be fair, I was like 12 or something. I probably shouldn't have been watching it, with such adult themes as diet pills. But I remember her saying something like, It's not based on real life. And I was like, yes, it is! I was, you know, totally going to bat for the idea that, you know, an evening show by Aaron Spelling that takes place in a Beverly Hills high school was realistic.
Yeah. The only thing that I think I was ever not allowed to watch was there used to be a cartoon about wrestlers. It used to be on Saturday mornings.
Nice.
My mom wouldn't let me watch it.
Why not?
And I don't know. Like, it was a cartoon. Like, they were basically superheroes. Like, there were no, you know, it was like a kid's show. It had all those, like, kid
values. Oh, was it like
values.
The Super Friends or whatever? Like,
no.
Superman and Batman? And...
No, but it was, like, it was wrestlers. Like, it was
right,
about,
okay.
like Hulk Hogan was in it. And, like, all these real wrestlers were in it.
Was Randy Macho Man Savage in it?
Maybe.
I fucking hope so.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, it was the same kind of, like, morals as any other kid's show. Like, don't cheat, you know, be nice, play fair, like, and all that kind of stuff. And I don't know why my mom was so opposed to me watching it. But of course, that just meant that I wanted to watch it
more.
Not that I had any interest in wrestling at all. But yeah.
I was not allowed to watch The Dukes of Hazzard when I was a kid.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't think I ever watched The Dukes of Hazzard.
Presumably because it was violent. Or at least there was a lot of speeding.
Right.
Or maybe my parents are just, you know, really prejudiced against the South.
Right.
They don't want me to grow up, like, you know, driving around in a car with a Confederate flag on it or something.
I'm trying to think, like, of what else I watched that I was banned from watching, or I don't think I was banned from anything else. There was lots of stuff that I probably should have been banned from watching. Like Degrassi when I was very young.
No way, man. That's a Canadian tradition.
It is. Degrassi is a fantastic show, but when I was 6 years old, I remember them talking about, like, STDs and condoms and stuff. And my dad was watching it with me, and I was like, Dad, what's a condom?
Embarrassing. I think I've talked
about his explanation on the show before, and it was really confusing to me because he was like, it's a thing that a guy puts over his penis, and but you can blow it up like a balloon. And I was like, what?
This is not helping, Dad.
Yeah, but the second that he said penis, I was like, oh, I'm embarrassed.
Whoops. I remember an embarrassing question I asked my dad once.
Mm-hmm. Now that I've met your dad, it's going to be much funnier.
Well, it wasn't sexual nature. It was just, I think my dad had a can of soda water, which is pretty disgusting, at least to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember taking a sip of it and just being, like, totally grossed out. And I thought I was, like, 10 years old or something. And I was like, is this what beer tastes like? And he goes, no. And I was like, oh, good. And then after I said that, I was like, I probably shouldn't have sounded so eager to start drinking, but, yeah.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good question.
Yeah. I was like, oh, thank God. Because I can't stand this shit.
No kidding. God. Well, that makes me wish that I had a beer to toast with you.
Yeah. We should have gotten some beers. But we got Faygo, so
that's
just
true.
As good.
That's true. Faygo that we're not going to drink.
Yeah. I wonder if Faygo has so much, like, preservatives and concentrates and chemicals in it that it might actually get you drunk.
Or mutate you into a juggalo?
Ooh, yeah.
That's my guess. Though, you know, I like looking at the ingredients to make sure it was vegan, which is what you should always do. it looked like it had less ingredients than Coke.
Hmm.
And
is it high fructose corn syrup?
No, it's cane sugar.
Oh, nice.
I know.
Good job, Faygo.
I know. Faygo's, like, keeping it real. They should practically be being sold at Rainbow.
Good job, Juggalos.
Keeping healthy.
Yeah.
Watching your high
fructose
corn syrup.
Yeah. They sneak in. Before you know it, you've got Juggalos shopping at Rainbow.
That's true. Mike would be really stoked, though. It'd be very convenient for him.
I'd have to change the name of Whole Foods to Psychotic Foods.
Or they could just have, like, one special store.
Yeah.
That's, like, devoted to Juggalo stuff. And it'd be, like, Whole Foods.
Whole
Psychotic
Foods
Market. Yeah.
Wow, Molly is really loving on your popcorn.
Yeah, she really is. She's much cuter eating it than I am, too. Popcorn is really bad with me because I'll just, like, shove it in my face. Like, I'm usually a really slow eater, but with popcorn, I'm, like, literally, like, get it all in there as fast as possible.
There's no shame in that.
That's good. I'm glad that I'm at a shame-free place.
Excellent.
Eat it, Molly.
Whoa!
Oh, no!
You're gonna make it rain, girl. So, oh, you know what? I never got to give my review of Breakin' 2, Electric Boogaloo.
Oh, I think now is an excellent time to do
let's
that.
Let's bust it out.
Let's
Let me grab my
it.
Little book.
Your dog is giving me the saddest face.
That's what she does when you have food, then she wants to eat food.
Thanks for the guilt trip, dog.
Oh, and I have also been giving thought to your, the challenge you issued.
Oh,
to,
that's right, of course.
Take
I knew
bands
that we had
out of existence.
Right.
But I haven't finalized it, so I could just kind of, like, go through my short list and we can discuss the finer points.
Okay.
So, yeah, Breakin' 2, Electric Boogaloo. So I have not seen Breakin' 1. Or, sorry, Breakin' 1. I have not seen it.
Nice one, white girl.
Yeah. But I'm telling you right now, somebody who has seen Breakin' 2, Electric Boogaloo, without seeing the prequel, that it's not necessary. Because
that's
it's one of those movies where everything's pretty well laid out in black and white. It's your classic scenario of inner city kids have a community center that's doing great things, but a rich, evil property developer wants to build a shopping mall there. So they have to fight off the developers with dance. It's, you know, it's one of those things like, we've got to raise $30,000 by Friday or else the bank's going to repossess the community center.
I see.
Let's have a car wash. You know, that kind of thing. So the community center is called Miracles, which in itself is amazing, because you just see all these kids, like, doing the robot and stuff on the street with, like, a shirt that just says, miracles. I'm like, that is a fucking miracle, man.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
I'm gonna go all out and say that breakdancing is a miracle. It's a modern miracle.
I wish I could do it.
So, Break Into Electric Boogaloo kind of sets the tone for the rest of the movie. It's one of those movies that shows clips from the length of the entire movie during the opening credits. So you get, a mini movie before the movie itself starts.
So spoiler alert.
Kind of, but I think it also kind of gives you a chance where you're like, nah, this doesn't look like it's for me, and you can escape early.
Right. So you watched it and you were like, hell yes.
Pretty much, okay. Yeah. But I was thinking hell yes, but I was also thinking, really, how cheap are you that you couldn't film, 10 minutes of B-roll for the opening credits? Oh, well.
That's true.
Cut straight to the chase. Within the first 5 minutes, there is a full-on, block party-sized posse of singers and breakdancers just marching down this inner city street. And of course, you know, the meter maid is writing a ticket, and when she puts the ticket under the windshield wiper, she's like, all right, bust it out! And she starts breaking on the street, and, you know, it's one of those scenes where all the extras, quote-unquote, on the street are, incredibly fit dancers, and you're like, yeah, they're about to break out into dance in about T-minus 10 minutes, or 10 seconds. There was an awesome shirt. I drew a picture of it. It doesn't really translate well into radio. It was basically, a tank top on one side and, a Grecian draped thing on the other, had a belt.
That's awesome.
A sequin belt. Yeah.
I really like your note next to it, too. It says, awesome shirt.
Yeah, just in case I forget.
Oh, good lord.
Oh, my goodness.
This is, twice in a row that I have fucked this up. I am a dick.
You are a dick. What the hell, Jordan?
God!
Okay, so, Break Into. Awesome shirt.
Yep, awesome shirt. Sorry for the interruption.
That's okay. I think I told you about this next point when we were in the city at one point. We saw some guy dressed as a mime getting on a bus. So, yeah, it's about this community center in, South Central L.A., where the kids are all breakdancing and rapping. And, you know, obviously it's a very sanitized white version of kids breakdancing and rapping as compared to how it probably actually was in the 80s in South Central.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a character who hangs out at Miracles who is a mime. And not only that, he's a white mime. And the whole time, every time I saw him on screen, I just thought, really? Would a white mime really survive in a community center in South Central? Because, I mean, I'm pretty white bred myself, and I feel the urge to stab mimes in the face. So
right.
I can't imagine how some inner city kids would feel if a white mime showed up at Miracles.
I feel like the only way that would be feasible is if the white mime just convinced everybody that they were so crazy that nobody would fuck with them. You know how it's like,
oh yeah,
the crazy white people really kind of earn the grudging respect of you know, minority communities
That's true.
That just because they're so fucking crazy.
Well, it's like Dave Chappelle says, when you see a group of thugged out black kids and there's one white guy there, he's like, I'm afraid of the white guy, because what did he have to do to get the black kids to respect him?
yeah, no kidding.
Mimes. Fuck mimes.
What are you gonna do?
Yeah.
That's a funny, character element that they just decide to throw in, though.
Yeah.
Hey, let's have a mime.
Yeah, and I don't know, maybe he was in the first movie, but at any rate.
Yeah.
There are some gang tensions. I mean, this is South Central LA in the 80s, so they address the gang problem. There are the Miracle Kids, and then there are the Electros. That's the rival gang of breakdancers.
I see.
Because clearly the gang wars of the 80s in South Central were not fought with guns.
But with breakdancing.
With breaking. With some sweet-ass breaking.
Right.
So there was a great quote where they break up I think they're at a dance club or something, and the Electros break it up. And they come in there, and they're all swaggering and intimidating, and they say, the dance floor belongs to Electro now!
Wow.
Yeah, it's like bowel shaking. It's amazing. and there was a girl at the club, one of the Miracles gang, who her hair was literally so big that she cut a hole out of the top of her fedora and had her hair piling out of it.
Wow.
It was awesome. It was totally out of control. So yeah, they had a break off at the dance club.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's how their gangs fight. And it's, I kind of maybe I'm just looking at this from an amateur's point of view, but it's really difficult to determine who really wins in a breakoff.
Yeah.
I don't know that's something that can be quantitatively defined.
But who did win? Spoil it for us.
Oh, you know the Miracles kids totally won.
Right.
The Electros went sulking off, like, looking at him like, we'll get you next time.
Was it like, really tension-filled? Like,
it was. I think it took place in those, I don't know what they're called, but, you know, all the millions of canals that are all over Los Angeles.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, like the Terminator 2 scene.
Right.
It was in one of those, and they were all breaking in the canal, and it was terse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can imagine.
I mean, it was only a movie, but I wanted to hide behind a couch at points.
Right.
It was really scary. So the main characters of Breakin' 2, Electric Boogaloo, are this guy. Oh, I forget his name, but he's like the best dancer, and he's totally hot and handsome and amazing. And his girlfriend, who's this very rich white girl, who's like a professional dancer. And she, you know, like she's done stage shows and she's studied dancing at these prestigious academies and her dad's really rich, but she just loves the soul of the breakbeat, you know?
Right.
So she's a rich girl with a heart of gold. And so she invites her boyfriend over to her very rich white father's house to try and impress him. And maybe the dad will give him the money that's needed to save Miracles.
Right.
So here is... When you're, you know, a kid from the wrong side of the tracks and you really want to impress your girlfriend's parents, here's what you wear to dinner.
Okay.
You wear hammer pants,
right,
of course, and a leather vest without a shirt. Yeah. And, like, some kind of, like, earring with, like, a big white claw or, like, a horn or something.
Mm.
Yeah.
I should take... I'll remember that.
Yeah,
I
keep that in mind.
I fucked up with Mike's mom.
You obviously
I can
did.
See now.
Yeah. There was a random guy in one club scene that had a mask of an old fat man. He was, like, doing the robot while he had this, like, fat old man mask on. It was pretty awesome.
Nice.
Actually, he popped up a couple times in the movie. It was just, like, the random masked robot dancer.
I don't know, what was the director trying to say with that guy, do you think?
I think it was a parable about age.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Oh, yeah, and there's another character, like, the main dude's, like, right-hand man. His name is Turbo. And he falls in love with this beautiful Latina dancer.
Mm-hmm.
And but there's a language barrier. And so basically all of her scenes, it's like the most racist shit ever.
Mm-hmm.
All of her scenes consist of her like saying five different things in like fake dubbed Spanish. Like an native English speaker trying to pretend like they're a native Spanish speaker speaking in English.
Right.
So, basically, her lines would consist of Turbo, Turbo, por favor, Turbo, Turbo. Like, that was all she said throughout the whole movie. And I was like, this is racist! Another awesome outfit, fluorescent green tulle shirt with metal studs, a hot pink tie, and fluorescent green headband.
What kind of pants was that?
I don't have a note on that. I'm just going to have to rewatch the whole movie and find out.
Be sure that you do.
Yeah. But the moral of the story, Miracles gets saved, obviously.
Right.
Rich white dad comes through and grudgingly gives his respect to the inner city youth. But the main lesson I took away from the end scene was, you know, when all the demolition crews pulled up and they were ready to break it down, but those kids wouldn't let it happen, and they lined up and started breaking in front of Miracles and, you know, made sure that they couldn't, you know, bulldoze it down. I learned, and this will come in handy, you know, because we like to go to protests. We like
right.
to protest for various causes.
Yes.
So, I learned that doing the robot on top of a bulldozer is really the most effective form of protest.
I guess I'd better learn to do the robot.
You'd better start, yeah.
I'll be a much more effective eco-terrorist if I can manage to do that.
I mean, just imagine, we might not even be in Iraq today if somebody had just done the robot
on top
on
of
a bulldozer
back
in 2003, or whenever it was we invaded.
Way to go, protesters.
I know. Lying down in the street and, like, locking yourself with a bike lock to something.
Yeah. Diet.
Useless.
Please.
Useless.
Yeah.
Start working on them robot skills.
Yeah. Yeah. Weirdos. Well, thank you for that inspiring
You're
movie
welcome.
Review. I think that's inspired me to watch it.
I hope this has illuminated your life.
It has.
Good.
Yeah. speaking of illuminating my life, we're still waiting on those Go Max Go candy bars, aren't
That's
we?
That's right. Well, we should probably let Go Max Go know that we exist, because I kind of doubt they listen to the podcast.
Yeah, probably not. But but still.
You've got a Twilight bar right here, ready to
right
go.
Right in front of me.
Yep, that's a Twilight bar. Yep. That's what it sounds like.
It is going to cure my PMS.
Yeah. And now Molly's interested.
You want my Twilight bar? You can't have it.
It will kill you.
Yeah. And I'll kill you if you try and take it from me.
Whoa.
No offense.
Did you hear that? Not vegan, Jordan.
That's just a threat. Threatening's vegan.
Oh, okay, cool.
You're only not vegan if you,
I'm gonna fuck you up so hard, you fucking cat.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a great scene in Hamlet 2, which is a hilarious movie, and I recommend it, where Steve Coogan is, like, having... The whole movie is kind of, like, about him having a mental breakdown. But there's one point where he's, like... You know, he's been working for, like, 12 hours straight on a script. And he's, like, got a little bit of writer's block. And he kind of looks over and sees his cat staring at him. And he just says, like, in the most hilarious voice, he just says something like, "What the fuck are you looking at, asshole?" Or something like that. And it's amazing.
So, talking like that to your animals, is that vegan or not? Is it vegan to be like, "You're a little shithead. Yes, you are. Come here, asshole." Is that vegan?
If it's a joke, then it's vegan. But if you truly mean it in the bottom of your heart, then your animal will know.
Okay.
They'll pick up on the psychic energy and chew your face off while you sleep.
Okay, that's good. Because I call my cat all kinds of names.
Yeah.
But.
Oh, yeah. I tell Molly at least once a day that she's a pain in my ass.
Yes. I tell my cats that all the time. I tell them that they are bad eggs.
Also not vegan.
Yes, I know. I know, it's like a double layer of not vegan on there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a phenomenon that has always made me feel bad about myself, is the, like, house phenomenon in like, TV shows.
Friends, and movies, too.
Yeah, well, Friends always made me feel really bad when I was growing up, because I was like... It made me feel like I was supposed to be able to afford all that when I was working at a coffee shop. And I worked at a coffee shop, like, first year out of high school. I made $5 an hour.
I need to interrupt you and totally blame you for Molly's nasty popcorn fart that she just ripped over here.
That cannot be that quick, can it?
No, it was a fart, and it has a distinct overtone of popcorn.
Sorry.
And it's your fault. But yeah, having a... Yeah, you're getting it now?
Yep. That's right.
wave it back over my direction. Thanks. Yeah, the whole idea of living in or working in a coffee shop and having an apartment like that in Manhattan is pretty amazing.
I know. Or being like, apparently like Phoebe, an unemployed songwriter who doesn't do anything.
Oh no, she was a masseuse, wasn't she?
Oh, yes, okay, yes, that's right.
Because, you know, masseuses make so much fucking money.
Right.
Not that we're dissing any masseuses. We're just saying you wouldn't be able to afford that apartment in Manhattan if you were a masseuse.
Right.
Sorry.
Right.
Now, was it the three chicks that lived together in that place, or was it just one person that owned that place?
I think it was two of them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Still, that's
ridiculous. An exorbitant place.
They didn't show all the deleted scenes from the sitcom or them, like, going out and turning tricks to earn their rent.
Yeah, or it's, like, their other career at, like, the law firm, or as dentists.
Drug dealers.
Right.
Yep. Oh, Molly wants more popcorn.
You can't have it now. There actually is, but you can't have it because apparently it's going to make you fart.
Yes, it is.
Sorry, dog.
You look like you have something to tell us from the Whole Foods specials.
No, not really. I'm just looking at there.
Oh, okay.
I picked this up to wave away the Molly smell. And then
you got bored.
And then I started looking at the great deals on Phalaenopsis orchids.
Wow.
Yeah.
I don't know how to pronounce that.
Yeah. And salmon burgers, which Derek Jensen should take note of.
Oh, yeah. Do we have a douchebag of the week yet?
Well, I mean, I kind of thought that Glenn Beck was going to win it again. I mean...
Yeah, he is kind of like the...
I mean, otherwise...
The incumbent.
We could give it to Mark Bittman.
What did he do?
Well, I don't... He wrote an article about being vegan before dinner for the New York Times. Where he basically said that, you know, veganism is joyless, and you can't.
It is.
It's not. So you know, it's too much to ask of anybody to. Yeah. Sorry, Molly. To be vegan full time.
Nobody can actually be vegan all the time.
Yeah, but it's totally a feasible thing to do before dinner. Mm-hmm. So you can, you know, get your quota filled, do all your good before dinner, and then
eat a buffalo.
Yeah, yeah, or like salmon or whatever else, And it's not just that sentiment that earns him the Douchebag of the Week award. It's the fact that he, like, provoked the most annoying PBK debate ever by issuing that sentiment out into the world.
Damn it, Bittman!
Yeah, because then you
Bittman!
Stuff like that is really annoying in the vegan community because, like, not only for all the reasons that we talked about when we talked about, like, the virtual vegans and the lacto-vegans, but also because, like, I mean, yeah, it's annoying that you, like, co-opt the whole vegan thing when really you're not, you know, you're just, like, abstaining from shit for part of your day.
Yeah.
Sometimes. That's annoying, but the really annoying thing is that it, like, those arguments make the vegan community a much more annoying thing to be a part of because it makes everybody go crazy.
Yeah.
And you've got, like, the assholes on the one side who are like, all vegans should embrace this kind of thing because it's, like, you know, it's a net good and gets people to think about going vegan, and that's good. And then the assholes on the other side are like, abolition or nothing!
Yeah.
Gary Francione forever! Like, and it's so annoying to, like, not be in either of those camps, because they're both just really annoying camps, and they make a lot of noise. And, yeah.
I just wish people would stop making veganism sound like such a horrible struggle. And
yeah, I know.
Horrible life filled with sacrifice and depriving oneself of any form of joy.
I know. Well, like the
veganism is awesome, let me tell you.
It is. And like Bittman had a quote in there where he said something like, you know, we can't deprive ourselves of all those foods, you know, because we calorie rich foods make it easier for us to like achieve satiation and like
things like meat.
And cheese and cake. And I was like, fuck you, I eat cake all the time. Yeah. I eat calorie dense foods all the time.
The American diet is really all about eating very small amounts of calorie rich foods, right? So we can get all our energy in the shortest amount of time possible so we can get out there and accomplish it, right?
Which
that's
also
exactly what America eats.
Which is also a weird thing for Mark Bittman to say because he's totally like, you know, the reason that he's even thinking about this kind of stuff now is because he used to be a food writer who took a very traditional approach to food writing and would eat all kinds of, like, terrible stuff for him and who had serious health problems because of his weight and because of his eating habits. And so the reason that he's now focusing on, more veggie-oriented and kind of healthy or eco-conscious things now is because he had all these health problems and all this stuff happened to him, and so now he's... You know, that's his kind of thing, is that he's looking for other things, other alternatives, and to just the standard American diet. But then he says something like that, like, you know, I mean, you're a food writer. You're not looking to, like, get your eating out of the way so that you can go on and do the rest of your day. Like, you want to eat all the time. Yeah, I know. It's like, I'm not a food writer, but I love food and all. And if I could eat, like, 24 hours a day, I'd be happy with that. I don't know. Anyways, it was annoying. So let's give him the Mark Reed Award.
That's right. Mark Bittman.
For annoying me on the internet.
That's right.
So yeah. So on that high note, I think we shall probably sign off.
Yeah.
We bid you adieu.
Yes, indeed.
We'll see you
Thanks for
next
listening.
Week.
Yeah. And maybe we'll have a report on how Faygo tastes.
Yeah, maybe. No promises.
Clowns out.